If life gives you lemons, then you should make lemonade. And then you should find somebody else whose life has given them vodka and have a party.
Welcome to The Daily Drive. I'm your host, Ken Knorr. The show is dedicated to keeping you informed, educated, and most importantly, driven to succeed. Everyone at the Daily Drive team hopes you enjoy this show.
Welcome back to the Daily Drive. We're right in the middle of a three-part series on decision-making. And if you're listening to this as a return listener, congratulations, I've already improved your decision-making. And if you're a first-time visitor, I've improved your decision-making too. You decided to listen to the show by something that was given to you, probably created by us. Ha ha. Just patting myself on the back. But seriously, we are talking about decision making, and this is a second part of a three-part series. And if you're a binger and you're listening to this in multiple episodes at a time, I recommend that definitely that you go back and listen to episode one, because we're going to build on episode one's foundations as we move here into the second part of decision making. And if you're listening to this live on the air, I would recommend that you go to dailydriveshow.com and catch up with the first episode as well. You might want to continue listening, but it is going to be a little bit confusing without the foundation. Yesterday, we talked extensively about how we make decisions and how our brains actually function to make decisions. And we identified a couple of pieces, one pattern identification and the second emotional tags. Today, we're going to talk about three markers that can help us identify a problem with our decision. The first, and probably the most obvious, is the presence of inappropriate self-interest. Inappropriate self-interest typically biases the emotional importance we place on information, which makes us readier to perceive the patterns we want to see. Research has shown that even well-intentioned professionals, such as doctors and auditors, are unable to prevent self-interest from biasing their judgments of which medicine to prescribe or opinion to give during an audit. We often have personal interests at stake in the decisions that we make. If the decisions only affect ourselves, our emotional tags will help us get the right answer. But when our personal interests conflict with our responsibilities for other stakeholders, our judgment can be unbalanced. It's for this reason that members of a committee are often asked to leave the room or refrain from voting if they have a personal interest at stake. In the same way, politicians are expected to place their financial investments in the hands of an independent fund manager so that their judgments aren't influenced by their personal gains or losses. In fact, the attention we give to designing incentives or bonuses for our managers to align their interests with the interests of our organization is a recognition of the degree we think personal interests affect decisions. The second marker is the presence of distorting attachments. We can become attached to people, places, and things. And these bonds can affect the judgments we form about both the situation we face and the appropriate action we should take. Since we're social animals, we're hardwired to become attached to other people. Love is a powerful emotion. But we can also become attached to a group, to places, and even possessions. If the decision we are involved in is likely to affect one of our attachments, the emotion generated can unbalance our thinking. For example, in yesterday's show, we talked about Wang. His love of the word processor and hatred of IBM colored his thinking about the advantages of developing a personal computer. Intense emotional experiences happen to all of us when we make decisions, and some of them can be even more intense. And the feedback loop we're getting from our emotions that gets attached in those emotional tags can color our decision making. We may have powerful memories of successes, failures, fears, or pleasures that we experience. Most of the time, these emotions help us, but these memories can also mislead us. Why did John Thane sell Merrill Lynch while Richard Fold could not do the same for Lehman Brothers? Perhaps because Fold had been at the helm for many years, resurrecting Lehman earlier in his career, while Thane was new to Merrill Lynch and not influenced by history or his emotional attachment. The final marker is the presence of misleading memories. These are memories that seem relevant and comparable to the current situation, but lead our thinking down the wrong path. They can cause us to overlook or undervalue some important differentiating factors, as General Broderick did when he gave too little thought to the implications of a hurricane hitting a city below sea level. The chance of being misled by memories is intensified by any emotional tags we have attached to the past experience. If our decisions in previous similar experience work well, we'll be all the more likely to overlook key differences. Previous judgments and decisions can definitely color our later decisions. We learn from our mistakes as leaders and entrepreneurs, but we can tag previous judgments and decisions with strong emotions. Where these judgments are sound, our emotions help us focus. But if the judgments are misleading, our emotions can cause us to cling to them long after others less committed to these judgments have seen the light. So let's look at another situation. William Smithburg, the former chairman of Quaker Oats, decided to acquire Snapple. He decided to acquire Snapple because of his vivid memories of Gatorade. That was Quaker's most successful deal. Do you see the distorting attachment here? Snapple, like Gatorade, appeared to be a new drinks company that could be improved with Quaker's marketing and management skills. Misleading memories. Unfortunately, the similarities between Snapple and Gatorade proved to be superficial, which meant that Quaker ended up destroying rather than creating value. In fact, Snapple was Smithburg's worst deal. Of course, part of what I'm saying is common knowledge. People have biases. We all have biases, and it's important to manage decisions so that these biases balance out. Many experienced leaders do this already. But I'm arguing here that given the way that the brain works, we can't rely on leaders and ourselves to spot and safeguard against all of our errors in judgment. For important decisions, we need a deliberate, structured way to identify the likely sources of biases, markers. We need to strengthen the group decision-making process. Okay, I'm going to give you a fictitious scenario. Consider the situation faced by Jim Simmons. He's the head of the kitchen appliances business of Chelsea Industry Holdings. He was promoted head of the entire consumer products division and needed to decide whether to promote his number two into his kitchen appliances job or recruit someone from outside. Can we anticipate any potential problems in this decision? Sure. His emotional tags could be unreliable because of a distorting attachment he may have to his colleague, or an inappropriate self-interest he could have in keeping his workload down while changing jobs. Of course, we don't know for certain whether Jim feels this attachment or holds that vested interest. And since the greater part of decision-making is unconscious, Jim doesn't know it either. What we do know is that there's a risk. So how should Jim protect himself, or how should his boss help him protect himself? Those are questions that we're going to deep dive tomorrow in part 3 of the decision-making process, where we're going to examine the safeguards we can put in place to help us make better decisions and reduce these emotional tags and these markers that get in the way of us making great decisions that will cause even great leaders that are leading large companies with the best of intent to fail. There are safeguards that we can put in place, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow. So I hope you go out today and make great decisions. Think about the decisions that you're making and how your brain is really working, the science of this. And the other great decision you can make is come back and listen tomorrow. Thanks, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to our sponsor, That Company.
Why should you work with That Company as your private label or reseller partner instead of those other guys? Because we get results for your clients. That's why we're the private label provider of choice for some of the biggest names in the digital industry. You just don't know it.
If you want to give us feedback, drop by dailydriveshow.com. Don't forget, you can listen to us live in Central Florida on WQBQ every day at 7:30 a.m. The show wouldn't be possible without everyone on the Daily Drive Show team, producer Josh Cardoza, web guru Taj Royer, and the social media man with the plan, Roy Wilson. If you think we did a good job today, toss us a rating or a review on iTunes, and don't forget to tune in tomorrow.